Next Level Banking, the DECA podcast on technology and digital assets.
They're not investing in a bond because it's a digital bond. They're investing in a bond because they say the risk-return relationship is what they want to have.
Daniel Kapfer, in conversation with Kara Kennedy, global co-head of Kinexys, JP Morgan.
I hope that I think we'll be talking a lot less about the technology and talking more about the solutions for clients.
Your presenter is Marcus Schultz.
Welcome to the new episode of Next Level Banking, DECA Bank's podcast on innovation and banking. Today, we want to shed light on the current discussion about blockchain, what use cases already exist, and what role banks will play in a potential new infrastructure, not only in Germany, but also outside the EU, so to say, globally. I'd like to welcome Kara Kennedy, global co-head of Kinexys. Kinexys is a blockchain platform developed by JP Morgan, which we'll discuss in more detail shortly. Joining me, as always, is Daniel Kapfer, Chief Financial Officer and CEO of DECA. Mr. Kapfer, in one of our first episodes, you described the developments surrounding blockchain as one of the core themes in digitalization and the process as, I quote, open heart surgery. What progress have you seen in the test subject so far?
Well, at least the subject is not dead yet because of the surgery. No. If we look into where it's going, I think it's going slower than we all expected. So I think if you count the number of emissions, digital securities and stuff like that, maybe it's a little bit slower, but still, I think at least we are fundamentally thinking that it's really changing the world, as we said earlier. So I think if you look at the digital securities, their emission is much more easier. Settlement may be easier, but it's like there's, like I think we had it in the first one, there's 20 trillion outstanding in euro. In bonds currently. So I think that's not going to change from one day to the other, but I think we'll see the change gradually happening. I think it is happening, and if only, I don't know, 10%, 5% will be there out of this volume, then we already have a decent absolute number outstanding.
Ms. Kennedy, Kinexys enables institutional clients to conduct near real-time financial transactions via private blockchain networks. What role does this play in JP Morgan's blockchain strategy?
Yes, so JP Morgan's been invested in the blockchain space since our Center of Excellence was established in 2015, and that has grown and developed into the Kinexys blockchain business unit today, where we work with our institutional clients to support them across a number of different use cases, delivering real value for them today through the use of blockchain technology and looking at how that can integrate with our legacy systems to bring additional efficiencies in the types of transactions that we support them with today. It's also about positioning our business and supporting our clients in terms of the adoption of this technology more broadly. And I think to Daniel's point, you know, this is a generational evolution of the technology
That's
infrastructure.
A nice word, yeah.
It will take time. It's not something that will transform overnight, but where we see the value is really in terms of identifying where blockchain technology and shared ledgers can deliver benefits in terms of further efficiency, speed, and greater transparency in certain areas of the market today.
It takes time, you said. You covered the global perspective as well as the EMEA perspective. How is blockchain and digital payments being discussed internationally? For example, in the US, UK, and Europe, what are the differences and what are the similarities?
Yes, so I think we work with global clients, those that are operating globally and in various different jurisdictions. And I think across the globe, we're seeing increased appetite and acceptance of distributed ledger technology and increasingly digital assets in various forms. From a regulatory perspective, there's obviously been different levels of engagement and speed. And it's notable, obviously, the changes that we've seen in the US administration's stance to the use of this technology within traditional financial services and more broadly over recent months. But in every jurisdiction, I think there is now a focus on ensuring that there is appropriate regulatory frameworks in place and in many cases also looking to support responsible innovation through the use of sandboxes, for example. Yeah. So we've seen that the United Kingdom has established a digital security sandbox to try and increase innovation around securities issuance and trading and settlement. And there's now also been an announcement of a task force working across the US and the UK to look at how there could be recommendations for cross-border collaboration. And I think that's something that as a global bank serving global clients, you know, we see our role also in engaging with various industry partners and regulators globally to ensure that we have the appropriate environment to establish solutions that can work across border and to try to ensure that there is a level playing field for participants operating in different markets and whether those are regulated financial institutions or net new entrants to this space.
But let's talk about the time lag we just considered. Is it about understanding the technology or is it about the necessary regulatory framework?
I think there's a level of both. I think there's also, a natural speed of adoption, which is which takes time, particularly in regulated industries and with use cases where the technology or any changes to the operating model has to be adopted across a wide range of participants. And I think you see that particularly in the security space, where the infrastructure is less about supporting discrete transactions. It's more about supporting an end-to-end ecosystem. And to make changes, in any area of that ecosystem has repercussions that need to be adopted throughout the chain. And that's where, I think that we have to look at this as I was saying, as more of that generational change. And where can we deliver value today that can then position us for further transformation tomorrow?
And I think the point is so important in terms of the global view, because I think there's a big hope that this technology might make it much easier to have transactions across borders, basically, because you would hope there's a common infrastructure, a common view on how a bond looks like. But unfortunately, I think these days, I'm sure you see it as well, there's tons of local initiatives which may end up in something similar as we have today in Europe. So, I don't know, having 10 different networks with 10 different views on things should be working. And then it will be as fragmented as the capital market today. So I think it's pretty important that we get a broader development, a more global development to really harvest the advantages of the technology.
However, when it comes to the technology, we often hear complaints that continental Europe is lagging behind the US and the UK. Is that the reason why?
I don't think on this one. I think obviously crypto is a vast space, and I'm not sure whether Carl would agree, but if you would, at least 1 year ago, if you would split it up, then you would say maybe other regions are more advanced in terms of crypto coins and currencies. And I think there was a time where continental Europe had an advantage in digital securities, and even maybe especially Germany with the new law that they did like 2 or 3 years ago on electronic securities or digital securities. So I think there is a chance still to push on this one. But let's see. Since then, it's similar. It's not like it has then taken off and a lot of things happened. But I think there was an advantage to take that as a USP for the European capital market still. So I wouldn't say on the security, I wouldn't say we're behind.
You mentioned different initiatives. Are there differences in the perceptions compared to the UK or even the US?
I wouldn't say so, because, I mean, if we look perceptions, obviously we have to look at perceptions by whom. And I think there was a very important point. I think obviously it's fun for us as we are sitting here talking about technology, but I think for the investors, that's what I had to accept. They're not investing in a bond because it's a digital bond. They're investing in a bond because they say the risk-return relationship is what they want to have. And so rather we need to keep it away from them, what the technology behind it is. And so it's really about what do infrastructure guys think about it? What do people that are doing the missions think about it? So I think it's rather their perception, which is important. And maybe then perception, I guess that's also where you were heading, then perception about blockchain as a whole, obviously. Because like at least 2 years ago, perception about blockchain was mainly influenced by Bitcoin. So it's something dodgy, it takes a lot of energy, la, 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 all these kind of things. And I think that has changed significantly based on the regulation that has been come up and based on the different use cases that are out there. So I think that's different, hopefully, these days. Yeah.
Ms. Kennedy, JP Morgan is very active with initiatives like the JPMD token. Which use cases are already a reality in your view? And what insights have you gained from the pilot programs?
Yes, so we're actually well beyond pilots at this point. So we operate blockchain solutions across payments, assets, and information within our Kinexys platforms. We have our blockchain deposit accounts, which enable 24/7 cross-border transactions between our clients, leveraging blockchain rails, but with integration into our traditional systems as well, so that our clients can gain the benefit of the technology whilst using that within the existing framework of services that they have from us. We also, on the asset side, have enabled a number of different applications within our platform, which support the use of tokenized assets as collateral. So, for example, in the digital financing application, which sits on top of Kinexys Digital Assets, it's possible for our clients to both create and unwind intraday repo transactions, which would not be possible within the legacy infrastructure. So that's a good example of where the technology can enable the same type of market transaction that takes place today, but having that take place at much greater speed and with much more precise settlement efficiency for the participants, opening up the potential that they can time their financing and liquidity requirements in a manner that wouldn't be possible today in other infrastructures. And so those are just examples of where we have been able to identify uses for the technology that support and enhance the client experience today. And then you referenced the JPM deposit token, which is a proof of concept that we launched this year. It demonstrates our appetite also to look towards the public blockchain ecosystem and really responds to increased appetite for cash on chain within the public blockchain infrastructure that will enable the use of bank deposits in a tokenized format that are transferable between JP Morgan clients. And so that is under POC today, but that will be something that we look to expand as we go forward. And, you know, I think this just demonstrates the fact that this is, again, a journey in terms of identifying where the client needs are and then where we can adapt and develop products to meet those requirements.
We're talking about processes, we're talking about efficiency, that's one topic. The other topic is the institution itself. Speaking about digital payments and the role of banks, what changes do you expect from blockchain-based systems and the digital payments? Will they complement or even replace traditional payment systems in the long term?
I think probably even in the long term, we're looking at this as a technology that integrates with the existing ecosystem. There's obviously a large swathe of the operating model which is established and works well today. But where blockchain technology can really assist is in building those bridges between some of the legacy infrastructure to enable greater speed, greater transparency of status of transactions as well, and greater efficiency overall. And so, you know, I don't see this as something that necessarily replaces, you know, how we do things today. It certainly can change it. And perhaps the roles of the service providers will adapt in that environment. But it's more of an evolution than a revolution.
And in the securities world, there's something wonderful, at least in the existing world, let's not call it traditional world, which is called delivery versus pay. So I give you the securities as long as you give me the money. And we're currently having the odd situation that we can actually handle digital security, but we don't have a digital payment against it. And that's why I think all of us try to find ways to actually have the cash part also in a digital form. But that's like Kara said, it's mainly, yes, you get what we guys call the fiat money, so the traditional money converted into digital money, and then you can use it for the settlement, because otherwise, to put it ironically, then I could settle the security within, I don't know, seconds, hours. But I would have to wait until I can see the traditional money. So that's no way forward. And therefore, for this use cases, it's desperately needed. That's why also we were a big promoter of the ECB trials in terms of having digital currency, but for wholesale, not for retail. And I see it completely the same way. I don't see us, and especially the continent and Germany seems to be loving cash anyway. So I think I don't see us moving away from it completely. But in the wholesale, in the professional world, I think it would be necessary, basically.
Yet Kara just said the financial institutions are adapting the development. So to be more concrete, how will the role of banks change in the regard of digital payments?
Yeah, there's two ways to look at it. I think there's people that say payment is just the payment method. So is it the digital euro? Is it cash or whatever? And once that method changes, then everything else will change. But there's also people that actually argue, look, payments is much more than just the method. It's everything around how do you move liquidity, how you can pool liquidity, what kind of services do corporates like to have in addition to just having the payment method. So there's also a view by people that say, I still have a role in actually providing these services no matter what the payment method is. And I think I'm somewhere in between. I think if we look at stable coins or other things, then theoretically you could think I give you money digitally without any bank involved. But I think that's maybe not what's going to happen, because there's also services around it.
If everything changes, one thing will remain. The client should be in the middle of the process, should be centered. Dika is also testing various use cases in the security business. What experience have you had with this?
Well, I think we, and similarly, as Kara said, the first one was obviously trying to digitalize the collateral, because it's very important in financial markets that you manage the counterparty risk by providing a collateral, basically. And you move those collaterals around significantly in terms of amount, but also in terms of frequency. So I think that was the first case we all looked at. And that has a huge benefit, because even sometimes you don't have to move it anymore between the central depositories anymore. So that would be also a big advantage. And the second thing, we focused on bonds that are not so easily transferable. So there's the Sparkassenbrief, the German version, or other things where you actually think it's kept in a vault and you have to sign it to transfer it and whatever. And you can try and actually change that process and make it much more digital. So, but that also shows that there is, one of the challenges for finding use cases is there's an established infrastructure of financial markets, which works fine for most of the things. So where's the added value? And the added value on the collateral was you can do it much quicker, like Kara said. So if you do a repo and you get refinancing for 4 hours and not being a matter of a couple of days, or on this one, I think the Sparkassenbrief you could actually do now in a couple of hours instead of actually doing it in a couple of days. And similarly to the bond issue by Siemens, which was also in their time it took, and the effort it took was more a matter of hours than a matter of weeks.
Question to both of you. What impact do you expect on the security business, and which current market developments in the area of digital payments do you consider particularly relevant?
So I think in the security space, there's a huge opportunity for the technology. And again, we need to think about this as the potential for how we evolve the the securities market infrastructure over time. To Daniel's point, I mean, the ability to move and settle securities in a much faster time period opens up huge opportunities. And obviously, we have a push in many jurisdictions to move to shortening standard settlement times anyway. So blockchain-based solutions are one of the tools that may be leveraged by the market to try to bring more efficiencies into that process. I think in terms of thinking about how this may evolve, there is obviously a potential to change what the ends of the infrastructure look like in terms of issuance of securities, which we've mentioned, but also the investor experience and how they come to interact with their assets and how they affect the transactions or the usability of the assets that they hold. You know, being able to have that ability to move a position to use that as collateral or to post that for financing on a programmable basis for set periods of time would really open up a great deal of flexibility that is not available to clients today. And that must be enabled with the appropriate payment mechanisms. And that's where certainly on the from a Connexus perspective, we recognize the importance of integrating those asset use cases alongside our blockchain-based payments infrastructure so that you have that ability to have the atomic delivery versus payment, which is critically important to maintain within the settlement infrastructure.
Yeah, I think the payment part, we've actually just been discussing it with JP Morgan for the shortening of the settlement cycle in Europe to T+1. There, somebody like us who has rather local operating model also needs to think about how can I make sure that once transactions settle outside my normal operational hours, how do I make sure I have the amount of cash required for that? How can I issue payments if nobody is there? And there we get to something which is maybe underdeveloped currently on the technology, which is the idea of smart contracts. So basically, this not just being a replacement of the existing thing, but also having logic within itself. And maybe then the cash side saying, okay, I recognize the transaction is settled. I still need to move cash even though nobody is there. So that's going to be the interesting part. And I think at least I haven't seen a big development on the smart contract side. I've seen basically approach of saying replacing the physical by digital means, but I haven't seen a lot of use by the smart contracts. And that may be one of the big things ahead. So I think the impact of the technology is still the same, but it will be evolving gradually. Like you said, it's basically even a question of generation, yeah.
So the most obvious effects are timing, flexibility, and usability, right?
Yeah. Yeah, that's certainly true. And I think obviously if we're moving out of securities, then there's the question of new types of assets, basically. So everything around crypto coins and those kind of things is obviously the idea of having a new asset, while on the security side, we're saying, I just have a different wrapper for the existing asset. Not so much a believer in terms of tokenization of physical assets, because that's again follows the ideas. Suddenly something is liquid, which is obviously not the case. So actually tokenizing a portion of a building or whatever may make sense if you have a special relationship to it and you want to invest something that is next door. But I think it doesn't change the nature of the asset actually.
If you both look ahead, what role will a blockchain actually play for banks, investors, and users in 5 to 10 years?
I hope that I think we'll be talking a lot less about the technology and talking more about the solutions for clients. And I do think that the expectation from clients will continue to increase in terms of their ability to have more customizable solutions, utilizing programmability through smart contracts. And the expectations on us as service providers to deliver on those requirements will increase. And that's a challenge we're ready to face. So I think that there will be continued acceleration in the adoption of the technology. I think it's hard to determine at this point exactly how quickly that will come, but certainly all of the indication at the moment is that this is likely to continue to be integrated as part of a broader toolset across the industry.
Yeah, we'll see a higher adoption. That's what Carol already said. We hopefully will see that infrastructure and those technology discussions we have currently are just a given then, because, I mean, we're talking about advantages of the technology, but that was a learning point for me. If we would like to do a transaction, we obviously need a common network to do that, or at least we need interconnections between our networks. And that's something which isn't given, which we are used to in the traditional world of securities, and that may be also be the case that we have a understanding of infrastructure there, which is just there and we can use it. And also, I think on the not the negative side, but also thinking what people sometimes speak about, I'm not a big believer. I guess that was true in all the CS we had so far of the DeFi world. So if we think about, is everything decentralized? I think what we're seeing currently, and you mentioned it on the tokenized deposit, all other cases we love to have in something called permission blockchains, which I think the technology freaks would say something strange because it's not public. But then again, you're moving around assets in high numbers, basically, and you want to make sure that the people that are acting on it have permission to do so. So I think we'll still be moving more in this environment, even though we're trying to do also things on public blockchains.
So we have a quite optimistic outlook right now. Let's see what happens next. Maybe we're talking about in 5 to 10 years again. Thank you so much for your time. Thank you so much for your insights.
It was a pleasure. And Cara, thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me.
That was Next Level Banking, the DECA podcast on technology and digital assets. Daniel Kapfer, in conversation with Cara Kennedy,